I want as much tax-free income as I could possibly get, right? Who wouldn't? Right? Our listeners, for sure, 100%. You want as much tax-free income as you can possibly get.
This is a long-term strategy. One of Nelson's principles is think long range. You got to think long range. This isn't, you know, if you do this for 3 years and quit, it's going to be an expensive mistake. But if you think long range and you say, I'm in this as a way of life going forward, you can't lose.
Properly designed and properly capitalized will be and can be the ultimate place through which to get passive income from.
If you're a pilot or high income W-2 earner and you want to add some guarantees and some certainty to your portfolio, because right now you have a lot of that tax deferred, you know, qualified plan wealth that you're building up, and it's going to be there for you, but you want something that's going to augment your retirement where you can grab tax-free capital when you need it, where you could stop taking money out of the market when it's down and instead come over here and take tax-free income to give the market time to rebound, then this is for you.
Only the wealthy seem to remember how to use this product. You can change that for your family right now.
Hey, I'm Dave.
And I'm Paul.
And this is the Wealth Warehouse Podcast.
So picture this. You're 58 years old. You served your country in the Air Force, in the Army, whatever. In this case, it was the Air Force as a pilot. You maxed out your 401k. You flew for the airlines. You made captain. You did very well. You're an instructor. You did everything right. You did everything that the financial gurus told you to do. And then a great opportunity comes down the pipe. And it's actually kind of your own doing. You know, you started developing a business plan because you actually have this hobby, which turned into a passion of driving and then later managing a fleet of dump trucks. So picture, you know, any construction site. When I watched the Amazon headquarters being built in Crystal City, Virginia, in Arlington, it was around the clock, just dump trucks in and out of there, every load. And I was just looking at the time, I was thinking, wow, that's just dollar signs, right? That whoever owns these trucks is just killing it, right? Absolutely killing it. So anyway, comes up with this business plan, and lo and behold, he's got the money to do it. But where is that money? It's where you have your money. It's locked up in the walls of his house, and it's locked up in his 401k, which his employer did not allow withdrawals or loans from the 401k. So you think it's your money, but it's not your money. It's the custodian's money. And indirectly, it's the government's money, really. So what does he have to do? He reached out to a friend who said, hey, you need to call Paul. And then the rest was history. We put together a group of investors, and Dave here, my lovely co-host, was part of that opportunity. The borrower got what he wanted. He got to, you know, jumpstart his company, turned one truck into three trucks or four trucks, built the business up, sold the business, and is now on to another venture, which is also a passion in the aviation space. But he got what he wanted. We got what we wanted. We made a little bit of money. So everybody won in that opportunity. But the bottom line is, the lesson here is, you can't get to your money if it's locked up in a 401k. And we come across this all the time with our clients, don't we, Dave?
Yeah, we do. And that's usually the moment people realize they've been lied to. Hey, this isn't what I thought it was. This isn't, you know, they told me to do this, but now I need access to this capital. I can't get it. I got to jump through hoops, or I got to get penalized and taxed to get it. They thought they were building wealth. Actually, they were just creating a partnership with the government. And now they got to go ask somebody's permission to access that money that they put away that they thought was for them. So it's a great example, man, because actually, speaking of that investment, it was so cool. We got to play banker, which is what we like to do in our lives. And I'm actually waiting on a check in the mail in the next week. My principal is coming back to me, plus the deferred interest on that note and the way we designed it, or more specifically, you designed it. So, you know, we charge some interest paid monthly, yeah. But then at the end, the balloon payment, you get the final principal. And then a balloon payment of interest along, you know, at the closeout of that note. So really cool opportunity, man. It just kind of
was a good one.
Yeah. You know, it takes you back. There's so many of us, we're always taught to chase ROI, you know, that ROI obsession. And nobody ever teaches us about banking. And that's, you know, that's what we do. That's what we, that's what this podcast is all about, is really teaching people how to take control of the banking function. Because yeah, you can invest, you're going to win some, lose some. That's just the way investing works. But the banking function is going to continue. And there is a way to control a portion of it in your life right now, and eventually all of it. And maybe your kids will never have to really even experience working with commercial banks, because your family will control the banking function. So that's a great lead-in to really what we want to talk about, is, you know, talking about those qualified plans, 401ks, versus just owning the banking function. And how do we own the banking function in our own lives?
Yeah, well, it's fairly simple. And you know this because you're doing it, but we capitalize in a very specific manner with a very specific design, dividend paying whole life insurance policies. So we basically took money that we already had, that we were saving somewhere else, and we just redirected that money into dividend paying whole life insurance premium payments. And now we own, between the two of us, more than 25 policies. Our clientele, you know, we might have a family of five, they have five policies, they have six policies, seven policies, whatever it is. But they're doing it too, and they're able to kind of attract those opportunities that we're able to attract. You just, gosh, I always seem to say this, but you just love to see it. And I love it when our clients reach out to us. They'll send us an email just randomly, or a text message or something, and they'll say, hey, Paul, I just did this, and I took a policy loan, and I did this. Now, keep in mind, some of these people are our friends. Most of our clients, we don't know. They found us through the podcast, right? So, but it's very nice to see the community as a whole, our community as a whole, just not only, you know, living better during this lifetime, but also thinking about that next generation and the generation after, which they're affecting directly by capitalizing whole life insurance. So, it's the velocity of opportunity, man. It's like that snowball at the top of the mountain. It's just going to get bigger and faster every single year.
Yeah. One of the first things they had to do, really, like Nelson talks about in Becoming Your Own Banker, which everybody should read, is rethink your thinking. So originally, you know, most people who only understand the investment side of the house and, you know, the stock portfolio and all of that, they want to compare everything to it. You know, so if that's you, the first thing you really got to do is realize, hey, we're not talking about an investment here. Infinite banking with dividend paying whole life insurance is not an investment. It's a capitalization vehicle. It's a savings vehicle. It's, you know, it's comparing apples to oranges, or maybe an analogy Paul would understand better. It's like comparing a Hellcat to a Honda. Like, they're two completely different things, not even in the same category.
I like that.
Right? Yeah, I knew you would. I know you would. So you got to really just start by rethinking your thinking and kind of thinking, you know, changing your paradigm. Think outside that container that you've been stuffed into and forced into thinking about, that, hey, there are things besides investments where you can put your money and it actually does something really cool for you. And there's no risk of loss. So, I mean, there's so many benefits to it. So the question I would ask you is, you know, what questions are you asking yourself? You know, stop asking, what's my return? And start asking, what can it do for me? So you could say, what's my return on this money I'm putting over here in this investment? Or you could say, what is that money going to do for me? You know, if investing was the most lucrative business in the entire world, I think banks would be doing a lot more of it. But no, banks do banking, which just happens to be the most profitable business in the entire world.
By far. Without banking, there is no investment. Nothing occurs without banking. And Nelson, you know, go back to our book here. Do I have it in the background? Yep, sure do. I put a fresh copy up today. Previously, that had been my original copy that I bought six years ago or whatever, but it's kind of torn up. But anyway, yeah, banking is the most important business in the world. Without banking, nothing occurs. It can and must flow. And Nelson says that in the book. And it's obviously, you know, I don't know, very elementary, but it's not something that I ever thinks about. I never once remembered my financial advisors talking to me about controlling the banking function, right? It was all product. You need this mutual fund, you need this index fund, or whatever, although they never sold me index funds at all. It was just mutual funds, which are a terrible place to put money, in my opinion. But it was never about controlling more and more money myself. But of course not. Why would it be? You know, they're incentivized to sell product. That's how they get paid. And I'm a capitalist. Everyone deserves to get paid. But there was never any solution that really resonated with me. It was all like just separating me from my money. Hey, put money in this IRA. Put money in this 401k. That's better than doing nothing, right? Throwing the money in, you know, in a fire. But it's not, it's still not the ideal setup, because somehow, you know, separating yourself from your money has become like the quintessential American thing to do. Let's just put it over here. Just put it over here. I can't get to it till I'm 59 and a half. Oh, that's fine. But we don't realize we need money now to do the things of life that we need to do. And I'm, you know, I love unlocking people from this mindset. They just, you know, just talking to two families here locally that I'm friends with. And they're like, Paul, this is starting to make so much sense to me. I want more control over capital now. And I'm like, well, this is the way. And we're going to walk you through it. So it's,
yeah, we're always sold a product for the rate of return it can get, you know? And I'd say, would you rather have 8% you can't touch, or 4% that you can use 10 times or 20 times or for the rest of your life? Because really, when, you know, the calculations on whole life insurance, you know, it's as an investment, it would not be impressive. It's not an investment. The only thing impressive about it as an investment is that you're not going to lose anything. Like, that's pretty impressive. Not many investments can say that. But it's not an investment. It's a savings and capitalization vehicle. And over your lifetime, it should yield about 4% tax-free growth. Not exciting. But you're not losing. But the greatest thing is you get to use those same dollars over and over and over and never lose the compounding effect. You never interrupt the compounding of what you're building. A little personal story. When I first started my investment journey back when I was a young lieutenant right out of college, of course, I got hooked up with a financial company. And what they sold me at the time was a front-loaded mutual fund.
Front-loaded.
And oh, it sounded great. You know, they compared it to...
You don't say.
they were like, well, we take 50% of what you put in the first year, and then that's all you pay for the rest of your life. I'm like...
Right. That's exactly,
you know,
right.
That's like only 2% over your entire life compared to these other funds. And, you know, they're taking like 0.5% per year. That's a lot more, right? Nod your head. Yes. Yes. Okay. That sounds good to me. Let's do it. Well, it turns out they got sued and they had to pay out some damages for promoting such a ridiculously inefficient and not beneficial product to a young 24-year-old. Like, how irresponsible. But that's where I started.
Yeah.
You started probably somewhere similar,
yep.
Right? And then we
exactly
over time,
the same.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Exactly.
But then it's
same.
Like, oh man, okay. Well, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, you ain't gonna fool me twice, as George W. said. So you got to get a little smarter, you know. And you start learning things like, maybe I should look at it from a different angle than the one that this guy sitting down across the desk in front of me is trying to get me to look from. So, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's a journey, and we're still on that journey. But it's so fun to see, yeah, the people that we work with come in, they're thinking one way, they end up rethinking their thinking, and then they grow over the years. Like, I learned stuff from people who have been doing this just a couple years, you know, and I've been doing it for 15, 16 years.
Yeah. And before we move on, I do want to bring up a kind of like this point that just popped into my head, because it's come up recently with a client of mine. And I'm going to say this to our older audience, new audience as well. But when you're paying meaningful premium into a dividend paying whole life insurance policy or a system of policies, maybe you own several, keep in mind, strategic capitalization is doing something. right? We've run into some FOMO lately, Dave, where people are like, oh, I gotta take a policy loan and go do something with it. Oh, that's fine. But make sure that it's something that you're knowledgeable about. It's not something, you know, if, you know, maybe I could, you know, take policy loans and buy and sell and trade automobiles, but that's a lot, that's time consuming. It's a pain in the butt. I want to be more hands off, but there's, you know, make sure that whatever you're going to do when you take a policy loan, that it's one, productive, and two, profitable, and three, safe. Like your return of capital is all but, you know, more or less guaranteed, or you've taken, you know, significant collateral to protect yourself on the downside. But don't have FOMO. Be happy that you're paying $35,000 a year of whole life insurance premium. And you're going to, you know, 10 years from now, when you retire from whatever your job you're doing, you're going to have that, you're going to have a ton of capital to go do what you want to do. That might be an investment. It might be, you know, you build your dream home. Who knows what it's going to be, but you're going to have optionality. And that's what most people who are just doing the same old thing that you know, the financial entertainers tell us to do, you're going to be doing this, they're going to be doing that. One of you will be better off in that moment. Guess who?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about, you know, a topic that's rarely discussed with in the traditional financial world on the back end, like during retirement, is taxes. You know, taxes don't stop just because you stopped working, right? Your active income stopped, but your taxes have not stopped, and they never do. So, yeah, I'll be in a lower tax bracket, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's great if that's your plan to make less money as you get older. But so
maybe you will be.
Maybe you will be. I mean, if you plan to be, you certainly will be. But do you really want to be?
That's right.
You really want to live off less money?
They change the tax rates.
Right. Yeah. Well, why don't you pose a hypothetical here with us?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the people around here, I meet them, they're in their 70s. They're still going, doing stuff. But let's say, you know, you're 67, which I think for most people is considered full retirement age. I haven't kept up with the changes on that, but I think that's correct or pretty close to the truth. You finally retire, you know, you sell your business, whatever you did, right? Maybe you were just a highly compensated employee. You were able to save a couple million bucks in your 401k. You want to go buy a moderately priced RV, right? That's very nice. You've had your eye on it for a while. It's $100,000. And you're going to take this, you know, country, you know, you're going to drive around the country on this RV trip in this new machine that you've got. Well, what you don't realize is that Uncle Sam, you owe him some of that money, don't you, Dave?
Yeah, yeah. So let's assume you're married, so you're filing jointly, and let's just, for the fun of it, you live in the wonderful state of Minnesota like me. So what you'll do, you know, and you're going to take $100,000 out of your 401k to go buy this RV and go live this life. And let's just assume you're only taking out $100,000. You only receive $100,000 of earned income that year of retirement, right? Like you're not taking Social Security, which is probably about another $38,000 for a couple in retirement. You're only $100,000. That's the only income you take for a whole year. Well, you're going to take the standard federal deduction of about $32,000. Now that means your federal tax burden is only going to be about $7,640. Now, add the Minnesota taxes of $4,000, and now you got a total of about $11,700 in total taxes on that $100,000. So thinking about it a couple different ways. One, you had to pay $11,700 just to access $100,000 of your own money. And if you think about it another way, look at it like this. The cost of that trip, that RV and that trip, just appreciated by 12% overnight because you had to pay $112,000 to take a $100,000 trip. Do we ever think about this? I think most people don't. You just kind of like, you don't want to think about taxes now. You certainly don't want to think about them down the road. So you just kind of push them off to the side and be like, yeah, you know, taxes, I know they're going to be there, but I'm not really factoring it in. It's just a little bit. Really, that's 12% inflation right there if you're only living on $100,000 a year. I don't know many people who are only going to want to live on $100,000 a year, and you're probably going to have other income like, you know, pensions, you're going to have Social Security, maybe you got deferred compensation plans, whatever it may be. So chances are you've got a lot of taxable income coming in.
Yeah, and piggybacking on that whole thing, you know, at some point, let's say you have all those other sources of income. You've got, you know, maybe a pension, you've got some other investment income that you're going to, and you're going to leave the 401k alone as long as possible. Well, at a certain age, and I, you know, I don't know, is it 72 and a half, 73 now? You're going to run into something called, is it 73? You're going to have RMDs, required minimum distributions. Because remember, throughout your lifetime, you were enjoying, you know, a tax kind of write-off by being able to deduct the contributions into the 401k, right? And you're deferring taxes on the growth as well. So it seems on the surface, oh, this is great. But on the back end, so you're putting all these seeds in, and now it's time to harvest those seeds. And now you have this bigger bucket of crop that the government's like, hey, you need to start taking distributions. And if you don't, they penalize you for the amount on the amount of money that should have come out. They tax and penalize you on it.
Yeah.
So, because they want their tax money. So you're literally, what I'm saying in short is, you have to take an RMD.
Yeah.
Right? That's the only really logical decision you're going to make. You're going to take an RMD.
Sure. And it's so funny how, like you just explained, they make it really sweet to the taste right now. While you're working and you're squirreling this money away into this qualified plan, which, oh, look at this. Every dollar I put in there is another dollar I don't have to report as taxable income this year. I get it deducted from my income. How cool is that? It tastes really sweet, kind of like dessert. And you're like, well, shoot, I'm going to have another piece of dessert. I'm going to keep putting money over here because this tastes so good. And I'm getting a lot of benefits right now because it feels good, it tastes good, then more must be better. What they don't tell you is, hey, you got to pay the piper at some point. And all those extra pieces of pie that you're taking now, it doesn't look like it's making, you know, much of a hit right now, but eventually you're really going to feel that pain. And it's going to be a punch in the gut moment. You realize you've been in partnership with the IRS this entire time. They did zero work, but they're going to take 10 to 40% of everything that you put away and you've been depending on to live that lifestyle that you want to live during your golden years, as they call them.
Yeah, so basically you sacrifice liquidity and opportunity during your entire working life, let's say 40 years, and you're getting, your only reward is, yeah, you can take some money out of there, right? But your other reward is a massive tax bill every year.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a gut punch.
It's your annual kick in the nuts every year.
Yeah, just,
here you go.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
What's that National Lampoon's Vegas Vacation quote? He's like, why don't you just give me all the money you were going to spend? I'll take you out back. I'll kick you in the nuts and we'll call it a day. Like, same result. Yeah.
Great.
You know, some of the problems with this, yeah, they feed you, you're getting a tax break now. You're really just postponing it till later. You know, what are the chances taxes go up versus go down? I mean, anything's possible.
Good chance.
But if I were a bet man, I'd say, well, looking at the $36+ trillion national debt, I'm guessing taxes are going to go up. I guess, you know, the Supreme Court just shot down Trump's tariff plan, so we can't charge 100% tariffs to countries and pay off the national debt. Who knows if that was actually going to happen anyway, but, you know, so there you go.
Yeah, all the people in New York, whether they voted for that guy or New York City, I should say, that voted for Mamdani are finding out like, oops. And I love how he's like, we're going to have to tap into our reserve. I'm like, you guys don't have a reserve.
Yeah. Wait, I thought everything was free.
Keep in mind. Oh, everything's not free. Keep in mind that, actually, it's in The Creature from Jekyll Island. He talks about the New York City bailout from, was it the 70s or 80s? I don't remember, but it's one of those decades, I think, where the federal government bailed out New York City.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
History repeats itself. It's funny.
It's funny, man. I mean, tax rates right now are historically low. They truly are. They've been up to like 94% as a high. So I'm guessing they're only going one direction. If I was a betting man.
Sure. Oh, yeah, sure. No doubt.
So, and well, let's talk about something I think will surprise a lot of people. I mean, it's going to make sense once you hear it, but it's probably something you never thought of. Hey, if you're married filing jointly in retirement, you get that $32,000, you know, standard deduction right now. Well, when one of the spouses graduates from this earth, at married filing jointly now becomes single filing. And guess what? You don't get as big of a deduction. Oh, there you go. Increased taxes right there. You know, you could offset that by spending less, but you're still getting less of a deduction, no matter, you know, which way you look at it.
Well, that doesn't sound very fun. You know, I want my quality of life. So you're saying Mr. Smith here didn't have whole life insurance, so...
No, he didn't, because if he did...
The surviving spouse only has taxable accounts to draw from, whether it was the pension, the Social Security, which you get the higher of one, so yours or your, you know, your deceased spouse, all taxable. And maybe they had some Roth, you know, who knows?
Yeah. I guess he didn't care about his wife.
Yeah.
No, but the irony there is you sacrifice liquidity and opportunity for decades. And what's your reward? A massive tax bill. You know, so what would we recommend? Well, we'd recommend, you know, this guy is 67 years old, maybe 30 years ago or 20 years ago, or even shoot 10 years ago. If he just learned about infinite banking 10 years ago, start a policy that's going to serve you, not serve the government. So it's a lot of the same advantages, only, you know, directed towards you, not to somebody else. So you still get tax deferred growth in your cash value. But you get to access it tax free, kind of like a Roth IRA. You can take money out tax free through the policy loan feature. And then you get that income tax free death benefit that Mr. Smith will leave to Mrs. Smith when he's gone. And now she's got a lot of income tax free money that she can do whatever she wants with. You know, what else? Plenty of other things to talk about here.
Yeah, there's just, you don't have the constraints with a dividend paying whole life insurance policy that you're using, you know, during your lifetime to take tax-free income off, you know, to maybe, you know, address sequence of returns risk. We've talked about that on the podcast in several episodes, including when we had Ryan on as a guest. So when the market is down, you're in retirement, the market tanks, you don't want to take from those accounts, right? You want to take from something that isn't market correlated. So you pull a policy loan to supplement your other income until the market recovers, right? So that's sequence of returns, addressing that. There's no RMDs in dividend paying whole life. This is a private contract, right? I don't have to do anything with it. I just pay the premium and the cash value goes up, the death benefit goes up. And if I want to take a loan to go do something, I take a loan to go do something. The life insurance company doesn't care what I do. I suppose if I were laundering money, they might care. But as long as you're not doing anything illegal, immoral, unethical, then you'll be all right. It's really no constraint to how much money I can put into my dividend paying whole life insurance system of policies. Right, where you have IRS limits on 401ks, you have IRS limits on an IRA. Obviously, the Roth has a huge constraint because they don't want you having that much tax-free income later in life, right? Well, I heard somebody say this. He wasn't a client of mine, just another Army guy. He's like, yeah, Paul, you have what I would call a rich man's Roth. And I was like, well, if that's the way you want to look at it, it's not, but it's... Sure, I can put as much money as I want in there. The only constraint is my income or my net worth, right? How much can I actually afford to pay in premium? Because the life insurance company is not going to let you overpay in premium or overinsure you. It's impossible to have too much life insurance unless you fill out the USAA insurance survey thing on their website. You're overinsured.
Yeah. Or something. Yeah, I remember that story.
All right, well, we're going to cut this episode right here because this one went pretty long. And we'll pick up with the second half next week. And really, we'll pick up right where we talk about really who shouldn't become their own banker.
Also, go check out in the show notes the link to our website, thewealthwarehousepodcast.com, We've got a bunch of great resources on there. You can watch Dave's little video that's very handy. And do not schedule a call with us unless you've read Nelson's book, which if you're watching us on YouTube, it's right there. So read Becoming Your Own Banker, maybe some other books on IBC, schedule a call with us. We'll be more than happy to talk with you.
Absolutely. And until next time, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.